Welcome to Decolonize Everything. My name is Rebecca Mendoza-Nunziato, your host and conversation partner. And y'all, this is the end of season one. And I want to thank all of you for being here for any or all of this first season of Decolonize Everything. It was a wild year. And I'm so excited to say that I'm not done. The show's gonna continue. I already have a few excellent interviews in my pocket. Thank you for your patience as I have tried to take a different approach to the productivity that goes into making this show. I sit on episodes, I listen to tape over and over and over. Some days I get really excited and I work for hours, and other days I can't get myself to stare at the screen any longer. But being here with all of you has made a world of difference. Knowing that there's a spiritual, amorphous collective out there somewhere, the fact that these words come into your headphones or out onto your speakers, the sense that we're building, growing, speaking a decolonial reality together. And good Lord, I know I have made some great mistakes. I know by documenting this that there's things that are embarrassing and that make me feel insecure and uncomfortable, and that's part of the journey too. I feel committed to this work more than ever. I know I have to keep listening, and making this show, while it might seem like it's about me or my voice, it's really about an intentional, sacred form of listening. And so I hope I can keep listening to you, whether it's as a guest on the show or through social media. It's an honor to be in community with you, to be in ceremony. I light a candle and I light incense when I work on the show, and I hold the work in my heart. But I love all of you. Thank you for joining for season one. Thank you for reminding me that this is my work. I'm excited to wrap up this season with a conversation with my sister. I have two younger sisters, Sarah and Jessie, and this conversation is with Sarah. I'm planning to get Jessie on here very soon. I'm so grateful to my sister, Sarah Nicole, for joining today to tell us about her latest adventure and her calling to work with empaths and highly sensitive people. In the episode, Sarah shares that becoming highly sensitive can be a response to trauma. It's also a gift deep in the bones of highly sensitive people and empaths. It left me wondering, what would it mean for Indigenous, Black and Brown communities and individuals to reconnect to the parts of ourselves that are truly sensitive, sensing of the world that we can see and feel and hear and smell and taste, and also the worlds we can imagine and dream up together? What would it mean not to be distracted by the ways that the world can completely sabotage our energy? The ways it can keep us reacting, fighting, fleeing, freezing. What would it mean to let those who are truly connected to themselves and also something beyond themselves to take the lead? And for those of us who have experienced trauma generationally or personally, how can that be transformed into these beautiful ways of connecting, of creating better systems, better ways of organizing ourselves? And Sarah is so damn good at coaching that at a certain point in this episode, she interviews me back. She asks me questions about my experience, about my own awakening, and she also calls me out and shares some of my dirt that, you know, only a sister can. So in this episode, we'll go over a few definitions in terms of what it means to be an empath, what it means to be highly sensitive, and we'll also critique and dream as we tend to do on this show.
So I'm Sarah Nicole, and this is what I do with my life. Was that good?
Yeah, what do you do with your life?
I am a life coach for empaths and highly sensitive people. My main things that I do with that is help empaths and highly sensitive people learn how to regulate and navigate their nervous system, their emotions, and relationships. And that's because us empaths and highly sensitive people, we have different nervous systems than other people, and we're often not taught how to regulate them. I mean, I think this is an important topic for everyone to learn how to regulate their nervous system, but especially for people who have high sensitivity and empathic abilities. I know throughout my life, this knowledge that I have now would have been life-changing. So I want to help people on their journey with that. And I'm also a grad student in a program called Mindfulness-Based Transpersonal Therapy. And that's a big mouthful. But basically, I'm learning how to use mindfulness and meditation and being in touch with our body and emotions in order to help people heal. So. Realize, so when you're highly sensitive, when you're an empath, like, you feel, the closer someone is to your body, you pick up on their energy, like, so. And other people, since they don't have that, I don't think they realize, like, if they're a foot away from you, they're not even looking at you or realizing it, but you're picking up all these vibes from them.
Whoa.
And it's just kind of like, yeah.
Okay, so that's actually a great place to start, because I love, like, a definition of highly sensitive person and or empath, and if they're the same or different things.
So they are not the same thing, but I would argue if you are an empath, you are highly sensitive. Highly sensitive is more of an umbrella term where it means that your senses are elevated. So a way you can think about that is, like, you live life with, like, all your senses, like, turned up to, like, 100. You smell things different. You, lights, a big thing is, like, lights can be too bright, or certain types of lights can be just, like, overwhelming, crowds, sounds. And it can be one or not, or the other. It doesn't have to be all of the senses. So yeah, being highly sensitive could be as simple as, like, things are really loud to you and that, like, bothers you more than others.
Is this, like, a way that someone's wired as a human, or is it something that develops?
I don't think we know that fully. I would go with the cop-out answer of nature and nurture, but I do think that it is more of something that develops. There are some people that suggest, and I, this is one of my beliefs, is that some of these things can actually develop due to, like, having trauma, mm-hmm. or the way that you were raised, because
yeah.
your system is trying to keep you safe.
But it's also a gift, right? And that's always the tricky thing for me, right? Because, like, I'm not a highly sensitive person.
That's an overstatement. I'm just
kidding. It's something I have to work at. Whereas I feel like you are, like, someone who has that both as, like, very much a beautiful gift of who you are, but also something you've developed through life. And so how do you kind of parse out where it's trauma and where it's just, like, a beautiful part of who you are?
Thank you so much for saying that, number one. But yeah, I mean, it's definitely a gift. I don't want to come off as saying that it's not. I do think that these things are a part of why it might develop, looking at it from more of a scientific lens. But also, it is definitely a gift. And if you think about more, like, tribal living, you know, people that were able to sense danger or sense things in the environment, food, anything, you know, it was in order to help the community and to keep people safe. So it couldn't even be, like, seen as, like, a leadership quality.
Yeah, like a communal offering even. That's cool.
But then also on the spiritual level of, you know, more metaphysical things that aren't as explainable, I do think that it is a gift because it can help you tune into things that other people aren't even able to experience, which that leans more towards, like, the empath thing, because, to bring that in. So
yeah,
empath is a sensitivity towards energies and emotions.
Okay. So the highly sensitive might be more kind of on this like physical plane in terms of what our bodies take in, whereas the empath is more of this kind of, like, internal energetic spiritual thing.
Exactly. Okay. So highly sensitive person that has been more, like, scientifically researched and is more accepted in, like, the scientific community because it's more just about your senses.
It's like you could see it on a brain scan.
Exactly. Okay. Like, it's not, but then empath takes it to the level of, like, you know, empaths have really amazing gifts. Like, some of us have, like, clairvoyance, clairaudience, clairsentience. So.
Okay, hold on. So that was clairvoyance. So that's vision.
Mm-hmm.
Audience would be, like, to hear.
Mm-hmm.
sentience to feel.
Yeah, which I would say most empaths have clear sentience or can develop that, which means that you can pick up on other people's feelings and read emotional situations beyond what you logically could explain.
Right, right. It's the gut stuff.
Exactly.
It's the, like, when you say, like, I just have the feeling, or like or what's that word I'm looking for?
Intuition. Yes, that's one of my favorite words right now.
Oh my God. Wait, okay, so I'm just going to ask you to explain a lot of things. Like, it really relates in terms of, which we'll get into, this decolonial journey of, like, the word, the academic word we use is, like, what is legible? What passes the test of being valid or being, like, true enough to be scientific or to be academic or to be, like, valid in our discourse, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, so, like, intuition is one of those things that doesn't count, quote unquote, like bigger quotes of like, this is not logic, this is not reason, this is not valid. Like, you can't just use that in a lot of these institutions. So,
well, I mean, I could go on a whole tangent about science right now, too,
because
science is a cultural thing. It's constructed, it's about systems. But honestly, if you go back to like the first scientists, like, let's talk about Galileo for a second.
Oh,
like, kay. He was going against religion and he was looking at the stars and he was saying the earth is not flat. And guess what they did to him?
What did they do?
They put him, well, I don't know if they killed him. I need to look into this. But basically, they put him on house arrest. They completely took away his power because they were like, this goes against the Bible. This goes against religion. So the first real scientists were against systems. And I fear that we're going away from that in our society the more that science becomes profitable. Because it's like, what do you study? What do you invest scientific research into? Well, something that's going to make you a profit.
You're on a sick train with Galileo. And I was just like, oh.
I don't even know. Like, I'm like, I don't know what happened to him, but it wasn't good. Like,
what happened? We'll have to look that up later.
I have a huge heart for empaths, especially because I think empaths are here to, like, help heal a broken system and a broken world, but we're also the people that tend to stay small because we're sensitive and a lot of us are introverted, not all of us, but and we feel everything so deeply, we overthink. So often these types of people are not the people that rise to power but stay small, but these are the people that need to rise to power in order to change the system. So I want to see the world change, and I believe that that will happen on an individual level, like as more people begin to step into their personal power, into who they are, their authenticity, that's where systems are going to change or where the world is going to change. So yeah, I'm just so passionate about it that's why I started my business.
Yeah. Well, and you're passionate about it, I imagine, because you are one of those people that has been misunderstood and that has, like, I'm sure you felt the temptation to stay small because of how violent the world can be towards people that feel so deeply. Like,
yeah.
Is that true?
Definitely. No, I mean, I see myself as a survivor and a warrior, to be honest. And I think that we all go through things for a reason, I believe. And I think that my journey has been very rough in a lot of spots, but I think it's because it's been kind of a pressure cooker up until this point, because I have the experience in order to help people now. Like,
a pressure cooker? What do you mean?
I've hit rock bottom and, like, had to make, like, to be really real with y'all, like, I had to make the decision, like, do I want to be in this world anymore? And the only thing that was like, yes, was like, yes, because I'm going to fucking change it. And I'm going to help people in my position, because there's so many beautiful people out there that just need some advice, just need some help, because the world is not set up for them and systems are not set up for them. And we could get into detail on why that is. But again, it's because it's stripping personal power. And the more power you have, the more you've been silenced. And so, yeah. Anyways, I'm getting all worked up here.
No, I know. It's beautiful, though. It's really beautiful because I do feel like you have fought through so much in your life. Like, because we're sisters, like, I've seen you grow and change. And there's been times where I, like, haven't seen you. But then you, like, come out of your little caterpillar cocoon. And it's like, whoa, what the fuck is she even doing? Like, little introverted spiritual human is just, like, rebirthed over here. But yeah, I feel like you found a way to make to show up into your empathy and into your highly sensitive essence, like your way of being as a warrior, which I feel like those words don't go together in people's heads. It's like, what does it? And so I guess the question is like, what does it mean to be powerful and to be, I think, what the world so often deems as like vulnerable, right?
Yeah, totally. Which you get to decide if you're vulnerable or if you're powerful, number one. Yeah. But in a way, so if you're not awake, if you're not aware, if you're not working on yourself, being highly sensitive and being an empath, which is sensitivity to energies, that's going to make you vulnerable in a way because you're not going to understand your power. So you're probably more prone to being overwhelmed, depressed, anxious, fatigued. A lot of us take on other people's emotions as our own because energetically we are not aware and we're not taught about our, none of us are taught about our bodies in this way. So all of us have these capacities in some way, just to what level does it impact you? But you can definitely turn that into a power. The more you're aware of it and the more like you have training around how to work with energies in your energetic field and energetic boundary. Empaths especially are super sensitive to like any negative energy, like anger, sadness, fear. And yes, you can learn. The first step would be learning to block that out. But if you can hone in on these skills and abilities, you can actually turn that. You can change the mood. You can be a creator. You don't have to be a victim to other people's energy. You can be the one that makes the energy good. You can be the one that heals and uplifts other people. And that's why, again, I'm so passionate about this work is because I see empaths as leaders in this way and leaders in the spiritual community.
What's the role of boundaries when you're experiencing so much of the energy of the world around you? Like, how do you identify when you need to, like, create a boundary, when you need to hold a boundary versus, like, moving towards that energy in the space?
Thank you for asking that question. Boundaries are huge, and I know this is overplayed in like the self-help world, but it's on another level if you're an empath or a highly sensitive person. So just a brief overview, some signs that you might have weak boundaries are fatigue, overwhelm, if you're having trouble like leaving your house or doing activities because you know you're going to be overwhelmed, or that might be a sign.
Because you're just soaking up all the stuff around you.
Yeah. Having relational problems. I mean, the list goes on, but basically, if you're an empath, having boundaries, not only, so there's three different types of boundaries, but I'm talking also about like an energetic type of boundary where you actually, and you can do this work through meditation. This is partly what I do with my clients, is I teach them how to, when I was first taught about it, it was in the terms of your bubble. So you strengthen your bubble and you can actually work with it and start to see it and feel it. And when you go into the world without that as an empath or a highly sensitive person, like you can even like a lot of us get sick more often, like even on a physical level, it impacts our cells and our bodies. So it's so vital to learn these skills. And it seems weird, like a lot of times when I start working with clients, they kind of laugh at first when I talk about these things. And then like a few weeks later, they're like, holy oh, shit, like this is real. And I'm like, yes, like it is, like, because again, this is not validated as real, but you're not alone. It's real.
Wow. Talk to me a little bit about like the, like how you create that energetic boundary. Is it all internal? And when does it become something that you like have to articulate to other people?
I mean, in my mind, there's three different types of boundary. Okay. So the first one would be relational. So I would say that's like saying no, which is really hard for a lot of us.
God, yeah.
But anything relational where you say, yeah, you're crossing a line or you do certain things to hold that boundary. Physical, which, you know, for empaths and highly sensitive people, like if you're around like really intense emotions, like if you can get physically away from that person, like that's going to help you a lot if you can. I'm not saying you need to run away from them because we can work with them again. But if this is new to you and you have someone in your life who's like a narcissist or really angry or aggressive, like just physical distancing during those times, like you will notice like, I don't feel that way anymore. It's because you're picking up on the energy and energy travels. It's a physical thing. It's real.
Yeah,
and then there's the energetic boundary, which, like, again, this is done through meditation. Well, at least that's how I teach it. And it's something that you do in your mind more than anything. But being an empath gives you, you're more sensitive to energy, but it also gives you, like, you can work with energies. Like, a lot of us are, like, do Reiki or, like, are healers. So you can work with your own energy and make your own energetic boundary, the goal is to be able to alchemize that. And I mean, that's up to you if that's something you want to do, if you're interested in it. But I think most of us have the heart to change things, to make things better. We're not here to just block things out and exist. We're here to change the game.
Right. No, I love that. And it is empowering, because I remember, like, and when you talk about these things, I actually relate a lot of it to kind of anti-racist work and also kind of anti-white supremacy work, because I remember some of the first times that I gave myself permission to leave a room when someone was just like behaving out of control. And I was like, I'm not, like, you know, you have that option, right? It's a similar thing. Like, do you speak up? Do you walk away? Like, do you, you know, like all these different things. And so just realizing, like, this is not a time where I'm going to confront, like, I'm going to leave this meeting, and just like giving myself the power to like get up and leave and being like, that was wild. Like, why have I never been given permission to just walk away? Because of how it affects our bodies and our minds and our energy and our spirit. And we have to choose our battles, right?
Yeah. You get to decide what you focus your attention on, what you focus your time on, what you focus, and I don't know why this is coming up, but a therapist once told me, you're not Walmart. You're not for everyone. And I love that, because it's true. Oh, like, you're God. Not. Like, you get to pick how you devote your time. Oh, not everyone's going to get you. Yeah. And you're also not here to heal everyone. It's not your obligation to interact with everyone's energy. Or even to, because, so, like, I'll have this time, and I say this to my boyfriend a lot. I'm like, that was like the empath thing was happening, because you can see someone just soaking into you, or they just want, they need your love. And I get, us empaths get that, and we get clinged on to people who are super unhealthy because we want to give them love. But you need to start to see that, like, okay, the empath thing is happening, I'm gonna draw back, I'm gonna put my thing up. Like, I'm not to say you shouldn't help people, but it needs to come from a place of genuine care, not that you need to help them.
Patriarchy and capitalism, like, they're set up to keep the systems running, right? They're set up in a way that, like, regardless of who's at the helm, they perpetuate these systems of injustice. So how on the ground, what does it mean for individuals not to get sucked into that power trap and into those institutions, but to, like, start to make change? And I feel like that's something that you're really interested in doing.
Yeah. To me, I take these more existential questions or societal issues, and I turn it into, I believe that every individual has to find the power within themselves, and I don't have the answers beyond that, but I think change starts within, and that's what my passion is to help people find their truest self and their personal power and empower themselves, and to the point that they can be their authentic self, because I think that the world needs that more than anything. We need people to wake up. And once that happens, I don't know how it's going to happen, but I don't know. I'm excited for, I think I see a lot of people waking up. Yeah. I mean, I'm on my journey of awakening, and I'd love to hear more about if you feel you are on yours. To turn the question around a little bit.
Oh my gosh, I was just about to make you do that. You beat me to it. Well, I'd love to kind of, I think it's so unique because we're sisters, and we've been on our journey together in many ways, but also, like, kind of in and out of togetherness, right? Like, we kind of, I feel like we've joked that we find each other, like, we kind of go off on our separate journeys, but we always come back and we're both, like, going through something similar.
Yeah, totally.
And maybe that's because you've got your empath powers and you're, like, drawing me back in or something. I don't know how it works.
Not at all.
Awakening, that's the question. Like, what does it mean to wake up? Yeah, it's a great question. I feel like something you and I have talked about is that I feel like as I've been doing this kind of excavating, pulling back the layers of coloniality as it pertains to spirituality, and as I do that, I'm like, oh shit, like, I have to keep waking up because this isn't just written down.
It's
individual, and it's also not... it's individual, but this is interesting because we take different approaches. Like, you take an individual internal, which I always need that reminder because I take a collective kind of external look. But to me, it's individual and internal to the degree that that is the multitudes of our ancestry and of our history and of our lineage. And it is internal, but it's also the spirits. It's also the earth. It's also how, but I think where you always help me grow is like, what does it mean for me internally to be at a place where I can engage with those spirits and those ancestors in the earth? Because there's no doubt that I have been trained, like all of us have been, to look at like this table and this ground as inanimate and as having no energetic properties, as having no spirit, as having no story besides the purpose it provides for me right now, right? Like it's very much like this human-centric thing, and it's very much this product commodity-centered thing. And so to answer your question, like I think the waking up is like, oh shit, like the rocks are alive. To discover that on a hike, or to discover that in like during COVID in the park near my apartment, and to be like, oh my god, these trees have stories and they're wise, and like this bird is my companion, and you know, like this waking up to, I think I would say like waking up to life itself and to like the spiritual divine energy within all things.
The sacred nature of all things.
Yeah, totally. Yes. And because I'm trying to draw on Mexica or Aztec or kind of ancient religion, realizing that this, like we already knew this.
Exactly. It's been stripped from us. And this is ancient knowledge that is life changing. And again, excuse my French, but it's shit on by the scientific community, and it's real.
And until they prove it, which is the funny thing, right? Like, until they come up with a way to be like, oh, like, plant medicine is good. And it's like, well, fuck you, we already knew that.
Yeah. Oh, we can use this for money? Okay, let's jump on this boat, right?
Yes!
But anyways, I want to, really quickly, I need to give y'all some context on Rebecca, because what she just said blows my mind in many ways, which I know you've been on this journey, but, okay, let's see, what was this? 6 years ago, I remember being at the park and talking to Rebecca about like bugs and insects and animals, and like how she was like, they're just robots. They have no soul. It doesn't matter if they die. Like they have no like purpose other than like serving humans. So it's like, I want to take you from that to like where Beck is at right now. It's like mind blowing right now.
It's true. I didn't know how to love other beings. I didn't even know how to love dogs.
But your eyes weren't open. You were so indoctrinated. And, like, I hate to bring this up because
it's the people need to know.
You can change people. You can open your eyes. And that's the other thing, is that this indoctrination is so powerful.
It's so powerful.
And it's scary powerful. Yeah. Like, to the point it, like, enrages me.
One of the reasons that things like that worked for me was because it meant belonging, right? Like it meant to belong to an institution of religion, meant to adopt these views on other people, on other species, on the earth itself, like that this planet is almost meaningless, like it's worthless, it's dirty, it's bad, it's like terrible.
So
right?
It doesn't matter if we chop down the rainforest and poison the ocean. And
no, God, like, why would you stop it? Like, there's some other plane we're going to.
We're evil. The earth is evil.
People are, yes, we're fallen. Yeah. And it's funny because you were on this call with our other sister, Jessie, but I was telling her, I was like, yeah, you should try to make friends with spiders. Like, it's really profound. And she was like, what the fuck? But it's true. Like, I mean, and part of it's been through, like, a contemplative journey of within somewhat of Christianity, but also then moving out of that space of the sense of, like, wait a second. It doesn't have to be like this. Like, I don't have to be alienated from the ground and from you and from, yeah, like,
your body.
Myself.
Yeah.
Which is still the hardest part for me, which is why I love what you do in this world, because you help people reconnect to themselves. And so I'd love to hear a little bit about how you connect these bigger social justice questions with this like internal awakening.
Yeah, definitely. And I think I just want to start with like what self-love is and what self-love isn't, because this is something like it's like my blood going a little bit, like in like the spiritual community or
get it.
I feel like it's something like people say self-love, like loving myself, treating myself, like okay, there's nothing wrong with that, but let's like take it back a little bit and look at what that means, right? Okay. Self-love is not like letting yourself get away with anything. So it's not holding yourself accountable. Okay. It's not, I mean, this ties in, but not being responsible. Mm-hmm. It's not saying, like, I am how I am, deal with it. This is me, take it or leave it.
Interesting. Okay.
Those are just a few.
Yeah.
But self-love, like, when you actually, so think about when you actually love someone, right? Like, there's tough love. Yeah. You love the truest nature that you see in that person, but you're also like, look, like, I care about you, so I want you to be better. Or I don't want you to hurt yourself. I don't want you to, like, you have that open dialogue because you love that person and you want to help them grow. True love does not, like, let you off the hook to the point that you're, like, it holds you accountable. But that's because it is also what's best for you. Like, think about, like, a little child, right? Like, if they just want candy all the time and you're like, oh, well, I'm just going to keep giving them candy. Like, that's not healthy. And that's not love. Love is saying, no, you can't have candy right now.
Right.
Right. So it's controlling our ego. It's letting. And I'm not. I'm also. So I'm going to a school that's very Buddhist. And the ego is, like, bad.
Is the ego bad?
I don't think that.
School? Yeah.
Like, I think that the ego is, like, what makes us human. So I'm not saying, like, it's a balance. Right. Like, how do I show up as myself, which is my ego, which is my purest, like, not my purest nature, but it's a way that I'm meant to show up in this world and this human existence. Okay. But how do I also keep that in check and not let it control my life? Because our world is run by egomaniacs.
It is true. So would you say, like, the ego, because I hear that too. Like, I hear a lot of kind of spirituality speak of, like, like, it's almost like the ego has become the new devil or, like, the new Satan or something. And it's like, resist the ego or, like, and I don't know about you, but I almost feel like part of my awakening is actually developing my ego, which is really fucking weird. And I don't think this is for everyone, but, like, part of me, like, honestly, like, even just this last semester at grad school, like, I never want to sound arrogant. And I try so hard to, like, be, like, so hard to not be that person that, like, I mostly, like, kind of hate on myself all the time. But, like, for the first time, I was like, oh, I'm good at this. And that, to me, was, like, a part of actually, like, spiritual liberation, was to say, like, oh, I still have all the same shortcomings and downfalls that I've always had, and I'm working on those, I'm paying attention to those, but, like, I did a really good job. And that's, like, part of developing a healthy ego that, like, maybe some kids get when they're younger. I don't think I fully developed that. Like, I was always so insecure. Like, I think back to playing sports and music and just always being like, God, I suck, you know? Yeah. And so, like, for, you know, like, I'm 28 and I'm like, oh, I'm good at this.
Yeah. Okay, I have some questions for you, but first I just want to, like, this is inside me. I have to get it out. So the ego is why you're a human. That's what I believe. You're here to experience yourself in an egoic way. And like I said, we need it in check, but like your personality, your gifts, your strengths, you have those for a reason. And when we say the ego is bad or when we tell people they can't have an ego, that's another way of taking away your fucking personal power, because your personal power is attached to that. It's your unique, beautiful way of showing up in the world. And who you are, Rebecca, is just an example. Like, who you come across, like, you're so unique, you're so beautiful, the way you shine, that changes people. It's not you without the ego, because that's just pure consciousness. And yes, we need to, like, access that and, like, tune into that and, like, check ourselves. But we're here in this egoic existence for a reason, I believe. And again, it's another way that people are taking away people's powers by saying, like, the ego is bad. And I mean, if that's your journey to lose your ego and you're going to go, like, meditate all day, like, that is awesome.
There's a role for that.
I am not there. And I don't think most people are.
To answer your question about this transformation, is, like, grad school's been really tricky because I personally pour my soul and my heart and my passion into my work, and it's also just a machine. Like, you know, they stamp a letter on it, you know, like, you get this grade and then, like, move on to the next thing. I've realized that there is this kind of ancestral indigenous wisdom in which I want to be in dialogue. So, like, if I write this thing, I don't just want a letter. Like, I want to communicate about it. That's the kind of work I want to do, is, like, that kind of tilling the soil. And so sometimes that gets confused with wanting a critique opposed to wanting dialogue. Like, I want to do the work.
I feel that, and I see that in you, and I think that you're so community-centered that makes a lot of sense for me. But also just to, and you're also, you truly are a scholar. I think you're a seeker. You want to know the truth. So I totally understand where you're coming from. But I also just want to challenge that a bit and say, like, you need to be the one that's like validating yourself. And I know that's so much easier said than done, but like if you come at it from a place of like power, that might even change the dialogue
for yeah
you.
I appreciate this invitation into like standing in more power of like,
yeah, this
I'm
is your
here.
Shit.
This is my thing.
This is your shit. And you're doing something new. And it's hard to find people that get that because you just have such a unique perspective. And like, I just want to validate too that like, I can get how alone that might feel. And you just want people who get it, right?
Yeah,
you just want people.
I do.
But sometimes as a leader, you are not going to have that.
Yes. I appreciate you saying that because I think that's literally my lesson from year one of Harvard is like, it is this work of standing in the power of like, I'm doing this research. This is my work. This is my life work. I'm bringing it to the table. I know that there are people I'm learning from and need to like continually be in that student position because I care about being a student and like always being open to the expertise of people around me. But at the same time, we again, like, I feel like this is this decolonial work of like, what does it mean to do research? What does it mean to study?
Yeah.
And that doesn't always happen within the walls.
And that's what, so my next question would be, what does it mean to be an expert?
Well, I love it because I do say I don't want to talk to experts and what, like on this podcast. And what I mean by that is like, I don't think we should have to have a book or a website or those letters behind our names.
Yeah,
like,
what's
to
that
one.
Tied to? Cha-ching.
Yes! It's tied to privilege, it's tied to money, it's tied... Well, and even, like, for me, going through this program, like, I'm being credentialized by this institution. And therefore, to others, I look like someone that can continue that legacy, which is where I'm like, okay, so how can I mess with that system? Like, how can I mess with that system
yes.
of, like, upholding the structure because I'm, like, Harvard educated, you know?
Preach, yeah. And I think that's, it's really tricky. And it's also, like we're both brown women that are being now invited into these spaces that we weren't before. And how does that look?
Yeah.
What does that look like in a healthy way,
yeah.
right?
Yeah. And you just named it because, like, we're invited into these spaces. But as you and I have talked about, like, being in grad school and being in, like, all these different institutions, like, we're invited into these spaces to a certain degree. That's what's so interesting about where we're both at is, like, first-generation grad students. Like, I thought grad school was just going to be fun, like a walk in the park. I was like, this is going to be 90% fun and 10% work. And it was, like, the opposite.
How dare you think that?
I know. I was just like, I just get to read and write and I miss it so much because I took all these years off school. And it's like, oh no, this is the ringer. Like people, like this is intense. And part of that is, I think, trying to strip us of the way that we show up to our work in embodied, intuitive ways, right?
Yeah. And I mean, my program's a little different, so, but I do think it's further indoctrination, that's for sure. And that's where we can benefit from the system. And if you think about like patriarchy and whiteness and such, like, yes, we're invited into these spaces, but it's under these terms. Here, sign the dotted line. Do all these things and show it. Mm-hmm. Like, and that's where I struggle with this because it's like we do need people who have like credentials because, and those are the people, and they need to break the system, but. It's also like part of me is like, no, like I don't even want to go along with it. And that's where it's hard because it's like there's this fear of like, well, what will I have a voice? Will people listen? And I don't really know the answer to that.
Like you've been along with me on this journey of like, what does decolonial mean and how do we live it? And so I'd love to hear what it means for you to pay attention to your identity and your kind of ethnic, cultural, racial existence.
Yeah. Wow. That's a great question. I struggle being biracial because I think that a lot of my culture was stripped from me on my Mexican side. And I am so excited to continue to learn from you. Because I need that so badly. Because when I strip away more of my white culture, more of my intense Christian culture, and I reject that, I'm left in this void. And in a way, it's been liberating because it's like, I can do whatever I want. I can be whoever I want. And it's also terrifying. And I can see why people don't want to wake up. And I can see why people don't want to let go of their faith or let go of whatever systems they're in, because there's nothing. There's something, but it feels...
Yeah. Well, whiteness has created the binary. It's this or it's nothing. It's this or it's emptiness. It's this or it's atheist. You know, like, there's an assumption of either you're, you know, white Christian, or you're on your way to hell, or you're, you know, like, other. Like, it's that othering thing that's, like, the void, I think, is an interesting word.
And I think, like you, where I'm not Buddhist or I'm not any other religion, I would call myself a free thinker and a mystic. It feels like I need community, and I need to reestablish. And I think that's also where, as much as individual power comes into play, we need each other, because the thing that I see happening in my work already is that people feel like there's something wrong with them when they wake up and when they step out of these systems, because the system makes them feel that way. And I'm here to tell those people, there's nothing wrong with you. Like, you're waking up, you're having and the system is indefinitely made to do that because it holds people in place, because when you step out of it, it's uncomfortable. And so we need to come together. And I don't know if I'm answering your question or not, but I guess it means community. It means being a free thinker and questioning the system and actually having the strength to speak out against systems, because I do think that requires strength.
When you said that, I'm like, oh, I know how that feels. Like, where you step out and you're like, I don't believe this anymore. And then you're just like, oh, shit, I'm like in the desert. Yeah. And if you'd be willing to share any aspect of that journey of, like, how do you come to terms with that? And even how you're helping other people come to terms with, like, okay, everyone's telling you you're wrong.
Yeah.
But keep going, like, press in. Like, this is part of the process.
Yeah. So I think when this journey really started to take off for me, so I went from being Christian to being atheist at a younger, like, 18, I would say it was, like, atheist, like, you know, no, not gonna do that. But, and then because I rejected all of that. I was like, I was just like, science only, right? Science, quote unquote. And then I started to have more spiritual experiences that scared the living daylights out of me, let's be honest, because I was like an atheist and I was like, this isn't supposed to be real, right? Because these things are not talked about. So in a lot of ways, I've honestly been on this journey kind of alone. I'm not going to lie to you. A lot of it has been like an online community, reading, just educating myself, because there's a lot of really highly educated people that talk about these things. Yep. Because they're real.
Yeah, right.
So I think, and even I still have to, like, even where I'm so confident at this point, like, I still have to read and connect with people to feel validated, because all of my conditioning up until my adulthood was that, you know, about certain things. So it's hard to break out of those things. And part of the reason I feel so passionate about this is because I see a void in it. I want to be there for people in the way that no one was there for me. Because we need it if we're going to wake up. We need it if we're going to step out of our comfort zone, if we're going to heal as people, if we're going to keep evolving and not destroy ourselves.
It's really scary and lonely. And like you said, the void, my experience, I remember telling my spiritual director, I was like, I feel like I'm just falling and there's no ground. Like, I'm just falling down this hole of, like, blackness, and it's just like there is no ground beneath me. Because for so long, I had built this foundation of certainty of, like, this is how the world works. This is the history. This is the God. This is these are the commandments, right? And all of a sudden, it's just like, boom, like, I just blew that up. And it's like, fuck, I was just like, what, you know? And so to have a companion, which for me was a spiritual director, where, you know, certain friends, you, there to just say, like, you're not crazy. You know, like, yeah, it's disorienting. Yeah, you're in the liminal space. Like, but it was, there were so many reasons to turn back around and be like, that's too hard. That's too uncomfortable. I think, like you, so much of my work has been like, how do I make more space for people to experience these things and ask these questions? At the end of the day, I want to know how to make meaning and how to lose meaning, you know, and like how to be alive and connected. And yeah, I don't know, like all those questions of like spirituality and...
That's what life is. Mm-hmm. It's always ask, like, if you're truly living in courage and truth and a truth seeker. And again, I think everyone has their own journey on this earth. And if it's not your journey to awaken, like, I'm not judging you. But I just feel like that's about to happen in our earth, is more people getting there. And I think more people would get there if we did have more of this dialogue around it. But we're still living in such, like, a Christian nation and world, even, arguably, yeah, that denounces all these things as evil.
Good, yeah.
And...
Well, and that's, for me, that's the colonialism, right? It's like, yeah, over 500 years ago, people came to these lands, and they said, you are worshiping the Satan. And they're like, who's Satan? Like, okay. Yeah. Is that bad or good? Like, you know, whatever. I mean, and like, we had poets and we had gods and we have spirits and we had relationships with the trees and with, and I believe we still have those things. And I believe that modern indigenous communities still have those things. And I believe that we can still have those things through like a tracing of our ancestral lineage, because being white is not a lineage. Like, whiteness is not a lineage. Like, whiteness is an erasure. Mm-hmm. It's a violence. Mm-hmm. And so that's why I think for us, like, being quote unquote half white, or having like a white side of our family, is like, well, that's not even it. Like, we're Irish, and Irish people have like real crazy spirituality.
Yeah, they've been like fairies and shit.
and like just imagine what it would mean for us to continue down this journey of like understanding what our ancestors saw and felt.
And that's so much knowledge, like, mm-hmm, living in tune with the earth, like, for, yeah, so long. And we think we have all the answers, no, and we live in our houses, like, so closed off with a lack of connection to one another. Stupid. And it's only, yeah.
And I think what, for me, obviously we both talked about, like, the void. I talked about, like, this kind of falling out, this, like, groundlessness. But I think part of coming to a sense of ground is, like, the earth is ground. You know, land is ground, ecosystem is ground. And also, what feels so beautiful about this liberation work, this awakening work, as you call it, this love work, is that it feels freeing. Like, I don't feel bound by something. I don't feel, like, controlled or manipulated, or, like, I have to check all these boxes to be good enough. You know, it's like, oh, no, like, this... like a mushroom. It's like, how do I go deeper? How do I connect? How do I, like, soak up the nourishment of the soil? Like, how do I create new life through these strange and beautiful spaces?
It's like, we don't look at a tree and we say, oh, well, that branch is too high and that it's crooked here. We just say, that's amazing and beautiful. And that's how each of us are, you know? We are a product of this energy and earth, and at our purest nature, we're absolutely beautiful. And I can't wait for people to start really believing, yeah, that about themselves.
Yeah. And like, how do we partner with ancestors and with spirits and with trees, you know, like with herbs and earth to do this work of being free, right?
It's like the divinity and sacredness of the earth, like, because we've been so taught to not view it that way. And the moment that you wake up and you start realizing these things, we're going to treat the earth and each other a lot differently. And so it's like the plant that, like, fungi, you can ingest it and it shows you all these things. It's like, is the earth trying to, like, save itself?
Yeah, for sure.
Through us do. It's just,
well,
crazy.
Well, and through partnership, right? Because, yeah, I think so often, like, a problem with environmental movements is like, we have to save the earth. So it's like, what if we were just like part of the ecosystem?
I love that.
Yeah, like, what if we did let mushroom take the lead and we're like, okay, like, you know what to do. We don't know, we clearly don't know what to do, you know, like, mushrooms, please, like, show the way. And they do like they're geniuses. They're not just fun guys, they're geniuses. Sorry, I had to do the pun. But like, it's, I don't know, I think just so much of that's the spiritual work, is like, how do I become a part of an ecosystem? It's relationship.
Yeah. And I think that brings it back to my thought of, like, ego and what it means, yeah, to love yourself.
What does it mean to be human? What does it mean to, like, yeah.
Does your love for yourself lead, oof, to the expense of other people and, boom, beings in the earth? Or is your love for yourself about this deeper connection of who you truly are in this cosmic world, in this tiny glimpse of time, in eternity, and you're here to love yourself through loving other beings and loving the earth and also your ego a little bit. But, you know, let's tone it back a little bit with that. But I wanted to hear, Becca, a little bit more of what you were saying about how it, like, the correlation between, like, how you feel in the world with, like, seeing, like, white supremacy all around you. Like, can you talk a little bit more about that? I'm interested.
I feel like so much of waking up has been around colonialism, hence the podcast, hence the name of the podcast, hence my research, is, like, colonialism is has infused everything. Yes. And so, as an empath, like, I think there's a similarity because it's like I'm so sensitive to that existence.
You
in the
see
world.
It. It's not invisible to you anymore. And it's overwhelming.
It's so overwhelming.
It really is. Yeah. And it takes courage to open your eyes to something you haven't seen before, whether it's energetically or with racial issues.
It is that sensitivity thing. It's a different kind of sensitivity, but it is a sensitivity to, like, everywhere I look, you know, like, and even at myself. Like, right, like, I see myself embodying this shit,
exhausting.
And I'm like,
ah! Yeah, but this is where learning to regulate your nervous system comes into play, because guess what? And it doesn't have to be meditation. It can be mindfulness in many different ways. Like, I love to help people find their right form of this work. But if you can create safeness in your own body, which is also a big thing, like, for us people of color,
yes,
and women.
Yes.
So there's so many layers on top of that. I'm not trying to make this sound easy.
No, for sure.
But at the end of the day, even if your eyes are open to, like, this darkness around you or this world around you that feels overwhelming, you can control your body. You can be grounded.
Yeah.
What you're doing is so important. Channeling all that energy, like, with intent. If you can channel that anger, and like, all emotions are good, right? And, like, if you can channel that into, like, intention in your life, which happens when you can slow down and notice what's going on versus just reacting, that's when you're going to fucking cut through things. That's when you're going to be the most powerful version of yourself, because it is so okay to be mad. It is so okay to be scared. It is so okay to have all those reactions. But are you going to let them defeat you, or are you going to let them fuel you? Again, that alchemy, taking that and making it into something that's going to, like, do something positive.
Yeah, and that I do think that's the role for spiritual practice, right? Because it is this, like, attunement. It is this, like you're saying, it's kind of this attention. It's this way of showing up to the work that is not, because I don't feel good when I'm just reacting. Like, that doesn't feel like the best use of my energy.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's more of, like, how can I slow down? It's almost like sometimes it feels like manipulating time.
Totally.
And, like, because it's like everything, like, everything about this classroom, this system, this technology wants me to just, like, keep moving forward. And it's like, wait, how can I slow things down, check in with myself, check in with the space, and, like, determine then, like, what is the right thing to do? Because sometimes, like I said before, like, the right thing is to leave. It's to turn off my camera on Zoom. Or sometimes the right thing is to, like, fucking say something.
Yeah.
And then how can I also say something and then not go into a spiral after that? You know, like,
yeah.
These are all these different, like, tools I'm trying to learn.
And that's where I would put that all under the umbrella of intuition. We all are born with intuition. I would say highly sensitive people and empathic people have more of a sensitivity to it, I guess. Or it's easier for us to hear it sometimes. Yeah. But if you're more in touch with your intuition, you're going to ask less of those questions. And you're going to beat yourself up less, because you're going to make decisions that feel so aligned with who you are. The type of knowing that surpasses our logical mind. It's a type of knowing that resides in our body and our spirit. And I would say even in a different realm, because there are certain things that, and I think this is where, like, the clair gifts, like psychic abilities, come into play, is that you're able to tap into something that our logical human brain can't understand. Like, and intuition is a part of that. It's a smaller part of that. I mean, I wouldn't even say smaller. It's a different part of that. We all have experiences in different ways. But I would say one thing just to say, like, what intuition is not, is that I think a lot of people let fear control their lives. And I would say if you ever get a message that you feel is, like, from you are questioning if it's from your intuition, if it makes you feel like fear, I would say it's not your intuition. It could even be a message that's not necessarily, like, comfortable.
but it feels this sense of like okayness. Like you feel like something is guiding you. It's a part of you, but it's also beyond you.
Yeah.
You could call it God. I mean, there's so many different names you could give it.
You could call it spirit. You could call it ancestor.
Yeah, totally. You
could call it
spirit guide.
Yeah.
All of those things play into that. So, but that's what, yeah, I would say it feels like it's you and something else leading you, but you have this peace around it.
Do you have anything else you want to say? Do you have any more wisdom to drop on this pod?
Even just my clients, they teach me so much too. I definitely see it as like a two-way relationship. Like, and I'm mostly just helping my clients like help themselves, which we all need. We all need support. We all need love. Like, we all have the answers inside of us. That's the thing that I believe. Like, I would never give anyone the answers. I want to help them uncover that, uncover their purest self. So,
so much wisdom. Dude, you're a treasure trove. You just have, like, goodness.
I mean, I've just been, like, reading my whole life, and then I'm like, I'm ready. You should see how many books I'm just like, okay, I've read maybe enough books to start talking. I just want to say thank you so much for doing this with me. It feels oddly formal because I've known you since I was born, but I also just love having these conversations with you. I do think that we need to find out what they did to Galileo, just because.
So thank you for joining us today to listen, to learn, to lean in, to feel. I highly encourage you to check out Sarah Nicole's life coaching business. I will be sure to leave links in the show notes, and of course you can find her on Instagram and YouTube. Thank you for joining for season one. A special shout out with lots of gratitude to Denise Vaughn, who helped me purchase some equipment, to Zachary Yarborough, who is my cousin and helped support me to get my theme song, and to my partner Michael, who puts up with my late nights and questions and comments about editing, and who bought me some real podcaster headphones this last year. And as always, thank you to the team at House of Pod, where I work on the production team as a story editor. Thank you all for letting me learn on the job, for being there for me and supporting my own adventures, and really for training me from day one in the Women of Color Podcast Incubator in 2019. It's been a beautiful 2 years of community with you. All right, friends, let's go forth and decolonize everything together. Okay, did you find out? Okay, I'm gonna look up Galileo. How did he die?
I don't think they killed him. I think they put him on house arrest. Let's see. He was accused of being a heretic, person who opposes the church.
Classic.
His teaching. He was sentenced to imprisonment for life. Because of his age and poor health, he was allowed to serve his imprisonment under house arrest. So basically, he was just in prison for like the rest of his life for saying the earth wasn't flat, y'all. And that was... Oh, that's via NASA. So anyways, yeah, science was originally rebellion, and we could get into that whole thing, and also like Jesus and stuff, you know, but.
And Jesus, you're going to end the podcast with Jesus and stuff?
Jesus and stuff, yet to come.
And cut.